Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
Number two of the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth filling in for Bill this morning. About five past the hour, it is a joy to have on the phone Dr. Linda Mental from the Dr. Linda Mental Show. And by the way, if you haven't heard her program, I encourage you to do so. Saturday mornings at 10:30 Central Time and Sunday evenings again at 6:30 p.m. again Central Time. It's a great show. You can always find podcasts up right after the first airing of the show on myfaithradio.com. Check it out. She does a great job, she and her team, Chris Weigel. And so, Dr. Linda, welcome. Great to have you with us today.
Hey, and thanks. That was a nice thing you said. And we have a lot of fun on that show, and I hope we give people a lot of help, too, when it comes to relationships. So it would be helpful. And the podcast and the archives are there, so people can listen to them anytime. So that's a good thing.
Your topic this past weekend was interesting, and the weekend before you talked about sleep. I mean, so you really cover a wide range of topics. And I forget, I listened Saturday, but the topic slips my mind.
It was on the snowflake generation.
Yes.
So it was really a wake-up call to parents in terms of how we're seeing kids who are not very resilient going into young adult life because they've been coddled in school. They've been passed through when they haven't really done the work, and they really don't have good stress inoculation. So we talked about that, and we gave a lot of examples that will probably blow the mind of most people that these examples are actually happening on college campuses, and they're a little bit scary.
Yeah, I actually remember giving thanks that my kids were grown. We were through that. We're on the other side, as it were. Well, Dr. Linda, obviously, this is a difficult transition because the reality is these kids that we're talking about have faced some things that, you know, I never faced, never thought for a moment in my entire life. I grew up in a small town in central Illinois, and I actually remember some of my farming buddies and friends would drive their pickup trucks to the schoolyard, and they actually had their shotguns in the back window of their pickup trucks because they were going hunting after school. Now, I was not an outdoorsman and didn't have access to a gun or anything like that, but it was unbelievable what we're facing today, and certainly as we think of Parkland, Florida. Your perspective on this whole Florida shooting and just what's going through the heart and mind of Dr. Linda Mental.
Well, unfortunately, Dick, this is just happening over and over. I actually, my very first book was called Kids Killing Kids, and it was a book that was written from a faith perspective after the Columbine shooting. And so I was hoping that that would be a one and done and that we would not ever have to revisit this topic again. But as we're all noting, this is becoming, unfortunately, a regular occurrence in our public schools. And it's very scary for parents. It is something that teenagers have to think about. And as we saw with the Florida shooting, they had drills on what to do if there was a shooter. We've done that at universities. We have drills on where do we go, what do we do. And unfortunately, it's a reality in today's world. It's interesting. I'm recording a show this week. It's not going to air this week, but the changes in schools and what's happening in our public schools. And there are so many factors with technology and the changes with access to guns, like you're talking about, and more people have those and have access to those when they get angry and upset. There's depression among a lot of high schoolers and anxiety and all kinds of things. But I think this is such a complex issue. And I continue to look at the research and try to look at what is being said about these school shooters rather than just all this emotion that naturally would come up around this. So, you know, every time we have a shooting, we have the gun people who come out and talk about that. We have the mental health people come out and talk about that. And then we have the law enforcement side of this, what can be done. And all these things are good conversations. I think the frustration is that there is no accurate or useful profile when it comes to figuring out who a school shooter is going to be. And that is a little bit frightening for those of us that are in the field of mental health, because when you look at the data, they vary substantially in terms of their characteristics. So there are some that were from intact families, some from foster homes, some that had good academic performance, others that were failing. A few of them were diagnosed with mental health disorders prior to an incident, but then there were others that weren't. A third, less than a third, had drug and alcohol use. So it's really hard to say this is the profile of a shooter. But there are some things that law enforcement has put together, and they do these things called threat assessment. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's a way of looking at what are the risk factors, what do we need to pay attention to. And so those factors might be helpful to talk a little bit about.
All right. Well, we will do that when we come back. We'll have more with Dr. Linda Mental on the Early Morning Late Show. It's 11 past the hour. Thank you for joining us. This is hour number two of the Early Morning Late Show, and Dr. Linda Mental is our guest today from the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Heard weekends on the Faith Radio Network, Central Time, 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, and again Sunday evening at 6:30. If you aren't a regular listener to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, let me encourage you to do so. You can also download the show via podcast on our website at myfaithradio.com. Dr. Linda, you were talking just as we went to break about some characteristics, because there is no profile that is so consistent. Talk to us, elaborate on what you were sharing.
Well, so there, I looked at a threat assessment site from the federal government and looked at what have they actually found that is not myth, but they've actually seen the consistencies in these school shootings. And so here's what they found. They found, first of all, that most attackers had used guns previously and had access to guns. Now, 68% of the shooters have got their gun from a parent or a close relative. So even though they were locked up, and I heard this morning coming into work that that this particular shooter in this incident had guns at the home of the people he was living with, but they had locked them up whenever he was there. However, they're starting to realize that maybe he had made an extra key, and so he had access to this. So that's one of the things that we've seen. Many of these shooters they're rarely impulsive. So there is a plan and an action plan, and it is methodical and it is thought out, and it is a plan that is evolving over time. And interestingly, prior to an attack, they usually tell someone or they talk about it in some way, whether that's social media or with a small group of people. So that's one of the reasons you were seeing on the news that some of the students were saying, speak up. If you hear of a student who is threatening violence, who talks about guns, is fascinated with death. And again, those characteristics are true of people who are disturbed. You know, in this case, I believe I heard something about he hurt animals. That's always a really big red flag when you hear that about a child. And so looking at some of the disturbances, if they're fascinated with violence, if they're into guns, they're thinking about death. In many of the cases, a number of them, bullying did play a role in the decision to attack, but it wasn't a factor in every case. And clearly, Dick, we know that every child who's bullying in school is not going to go out and do this kind of horrific act. So while we know, okay, bullying, pay attention to it, it may or may not be that motivator, but it could be. So there again, that's one of those, it could be. And in many cases, other students were involved. So I know we don't think about that. We think about these attackers acting alone, which in two-thirds of the cases. However, in almost half of the cases, friends or a fellow student influenced or even encouraged the attackers to act. So they're surrounding themselves with people who are revving them up and getting them worked up and encouraging this kind of violence. So those are some of the things that have happened. You know, they're wrapped up in a violent culture is what usually happens. And I think, again, I've been on a bandwagon about violent video games.
I was curious, yes.
Violent culture. Yeah, and people poo-poo that and say, oh, whatever. But we see this over and over where when someone is in a homicidal sort of state of mind, they usually rev themselves up with what we call violent entertainment or violent acts. I was reading a psychiatric evaluation of a patient over the weekend, and this was a person who was having homicidal feelings, and he was playing violent video games every day to sort of work out his aggressive impulses. Now, what we know about aggression is that that is not cathartic. What that does is aggression begets aggression. So it is not a helpful thing for people to do. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff in here. I'm a proponent of banning assault and semi-assault weapons. I'm all for the Second Amendment. I think people should have the right to bear arms, but we're in a very weird and different culture than we were when the Constitution and the time of our founders was setting these things. I'm not saying people shouldn't have guns, but I really have a hard time justifying why anybody for home protection would need an automatic or a semi-automatic weapon. And my understanding of those weapons is that they're definitely developed for war and they're used to do multiple killings. So that one I have a trouble with. I think one of the other things that I am supportive of is metal detectors in a lot of schools.
Yes.
I hate to get to that point, but that is one of the things that might work. Now, it's interesting also that having armed police in the schools, and I know there's been a lot of talk about that, but again, looking at the data, and Columbine and Virginia Tech, one of the two most, you know, awful and horrific shootings, there were armed police at the school. So that isn't always a deterrent.
Sure.
But certainly metal detectors would be one of the ways that you could at least try to make sure that nobody was coming into the school with a gun in tow.
Dr. Linda, when we come back, we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, I do want to ask you, for the parents and grandparents of younger students who maybe have the opportunity to influence them about some of the things they should be talking about, what should they avoid. We'll have more with Dr. Linda Mental on the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold in just a moment. Past the hour. Happy President's Day if you're home, getting the day off perhaps. Hope you're enjoying it. Certainly appreciate you tuning in today to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth, filling in for Bill today, and trust he will be back tomorrow, and looking forward to his return. But I am thrilled to have Dr. Linda Mental with me this hour, as she's a regular contributor to the Early Morning Late Show. And, of course, you can catch her program on myfaithradio.com. Click on our homepage, the program page, and you can see her Saturday morning and Sunday evenings. Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. Central Time, and again, Sunday evening, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. And we're talking, as you would expect today, about the Parkland shootings in Florida just last week. Always one of the questions that comes up, and it's always new for new people who are experiencing this in terms of the ages of their children. How do I talk to my children about what just happened? How do I help them process? And Dr. Linda, I know there's probably a general answer to that, but I always think of the boy or girl who doesn't talk much at all. Do I step into their world and try to draw them out, or do I let them process on their own?
Well, it's always good with teens to let them kind of take the lead in terms of where they are with trying to deal with this. It's very important for parents to also reiterate to students that school is still one of the safest places you can be. I know it doesn't feel like that when we have a shooting like this, but overall, this is not the place that is going to create the most violence in their life. So while that isn't a great reassuring message when we do see an incident like this, you still have to help kids not develop a lot of fear and anxiety over this. I think another really good thing for parents is you really have to talk to your students about early identification issues on social media. And kids are on social media 24/7. They're looking at that. You really need to help them understand, look, you have to speak up if you see something, if you note something, you need to tell a person in authority. You need to be aware of what's going on. The same is true in the schools. Teachers have to be on high alert. You know, we have too much, Dick, of this Monday morning quarterbacking with a lot of these students who show disturbing art in their classes, who, you know, wrote things on Facebook and showed weird videos on Snapchat, all kinds of things. So really alerting students that you live in a different world, and social media is a 24/7 coverage. And whatever you're seeing there now, you've got to start talking about and dealing with. And this is not the time, you know, how we used to be told in school, you know, don't rat on somebody because that's just not cool. Well, in today's world, you need to be able to say something if you see something. And so that is really, really important. And, you know, we've got to do better with helping kids cope. And we kind of started the conversation with this, with the show that aired this past weekend, that when there is difficulty like this, and from a spiritual sense, we have to prepare our kids and say, you know, the Bible says when there is tribulation, not if. So there's going to be bad things that happen and terrible things that happen to us. And we can't live in fear and anxiety because of those. You know, you probably know my story. My brother was blown up on an airplane from a terrorist bomb. That doesn't mean I never get on an airplane again. In fact, I have to fly pretty regularly. But I have to process that grief. I have to be able to talk about that grief. I have to work through that grief. And then I have to not let fear run my life, because that is not a scriptural principle. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. That's what the Bible says. But a spirit, you know, power, love, a strong mind. So we've got to get our kids aware of the difficulties. We have to help them move through difficult times like this. But most of all, we need to give them a spiritual foundation and formation so that they can have something to hold on to when things like this happen. And of course, we know that when something horrible happens to somebody that we love, if they are a person of faith, this is not the end, and we will see them again, which is a great hope to have as a Christian person.
Dr. Linda Mental is our guest in the Early Morning Late Show, and I so appreciate Dr. Linda's insight. You talked about the see something, say something. I do think that is probably a great policy, but I do think it has to come with great reassurances that if you do report somebody, certainly from a student perspective, that you're left out of the equation. There's some anonymity that is given you and is guaranteed. Agree?
I agree. And the problem with that, this whole area is the follow through. And then what do you do with that? And how does that get dealt with? Because there's all these rights, you know, that students have a privacy, and you have to always balance all of this with, well, okay, now I know this. What do I do with this? How does that person stay anonymous? But there are, you know, hotlines set up in schools where you can give anonymous tips. And a lot of schools have gone to that policy where you call things in. And we know from this current situation that there was a call in, that there was a video that somebody even sent in to the police of this particular person shooting his BB gun and aiming it at the neighbor's house and doing things. So you can call those things in and remain anonymous. But we've got to encourage people to do that. I would rather be a kid who, you know, made the call to say something and prevent something than the kid who said, oh, I knew something and I never said anything. Because just imagine the guilt that somebody like that might carry with them. Now, it's not their responsibility, but if you have a tip, you need to tell. So I always think it's better to err on the side of speaking up in these situations.
That's great advice. And with that, we will leave Dr. Linda Mental today. Thank you, Linda. Appreciate you and your work on Faith Radio. Have a great day. We'll be back with Breakpoint in just a few moments. Ooh. 31 past the hour, Breakpoint, John Stone Street, Alec. Eric Metaxas, heard every weekday at the same time. And, of course, valuable information for you. We're going to have the news in just a few moments, and then after that, we're going to be talking to Dr. Richard Land from the Southern Evangelical Seminary. Also, his thoughts and comments on the Parkland, Florida shooting, among other comments and questions we have for him. So it's going to be a great last segment of the Early Morning Late Show. Thanks for joining us today. 36 minutes past the hour. Ed Welch, a counselor and author, says it's only when we acknowledge our need for God that breaking free from shame and regret can become possible. Here's Ed Welch.
There is this reality that presses in on us. And in Romans 1, there's this knowledge of God that we have. And so working against all of that is us saying we are not okay. We're not okay. We don't measure up. I mean, we don't always recognize that that's before God. But ultimately, that presses in on every single human heart. So no matter how many accomplishments and accolades we have, there's still this accurate sense that, yeah, we don't ultimately measure up. But instead of turning to Christ and simply saying, absolutely, I don't measure up, and I trust in you who does, and you do measure up. Instead of that, we just keep trying to add more of those things to our resume, hoping that one more thing will finally get us over the top.
If you'd like to hear more from Ed Welch, counselor and author, you can go to myfaithradio.com and in the search bar, Break Free from Shame and Regret, and you can listen to the podcast. It is 36-37 minutes past the hour. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll have a great conversation with our good friend, Dr. Richard Land, coming up in just a moment.
When I was a kid, the music I liked drove my parents crazy. They couldn't understand why I liked what they called noise. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You might not like the music your teen listens to either, but I meet a lot of parents who make a big deal out of a small issue. They major on the minors. Even though you may not like a particular type of music, step back and take stock. Is the choice of music, or whatever else you're dealing with today, the thing that should fracture your relationship? It's amazing how your teen's taste will change over time. Before long, they might even like much the same music you do. So, make sure you're focusing on the majors, not the minors.
Look for the new book from Mark Gregston titled Leaving a Legacy of Hope when you visit ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Good morning. You're listening to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth filling in for Bill. Dr. Richard Land, president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary and also executive editor of the Christian Post, is a regular contributor on the Early Morning Late Show. Dr. Land, welcome and good morning.
Good morning to you. Happy Washington's birthday.
Yeah, we're celebrating Lincoln.
Close. Yeah. Lincoln and Washington, yes.
As a boy from Illinois, we, of course, take great pride in Lincoln's birthday.
Well, you know, he's retired the title of the greatest president in American history. No matter how long America survives, and there's no question that he has retired the title. And Washington is second. I mean, everybody else is just competing for third.
Any nominees?
Well, yeah. I'd certainly want to put Jefferson in that category, maybe number three. I'd want to put Reagan in that category, maybe number four. In terms of sheer consequence, FDR and Truman certainly have to go in there, and Eisenhower.
Very true. Well, that's
you know, Eisenhower's gone in history. You know, shows you that history. Yeah, news is just the first draft of history. History now says that Ike is being rated as the fifth greatest president in American history. When he left office, he was 33rd.
That's true. It was very interesting, and I just I read about him the other day. We forget his success in World War II, and then to go on and to really have a very successful presidency. I can. Certainly buy into the idea that he's the fifth best president of the United States. Sir, good to have you on board today. And it's not a great topic or conversation, but it still is the one that is drawing the heat and the headlines. And it's the Parkland shootings. Just your personal reaction over this tragic event.
Well, you know, it just breaks my heart as a parent to think about having a child in that school and getting a phone call that your child has been shot or your child is hostage in a school where a massacre like that's going on. I can't even imagine. Our hearts and our prayers go out to those parents and to all of those who lost loved ones and to those classmates who are traumatized. I'm sure they'll be traumatized to some degree by this the rest of their lives. They'll never be the same. And, you know, to me, the point that's being missed by a lot of the commentary is they go to the shiny object, which is the gun. But I want to talk about the shooter. Our culture, for various reasons, is producing an inordinate number of young men who are emotionally and mentally disturbed and culturally deprived. One of the people involved with this particular shooter, Cruz, said he's a broken child. His adopted mother died last year. His adopted father died earlier. He had no one to stay with. He was staying with a classmate, a friend, family. He had developmental problems. He had emotional problems. He was showing, all kinds of signs, all kinds of triggers, extreme cruelty to animals, expelled from school, going to a special school, all of these things. And nobody picked up on it enough to say, you know, this guy is a danger to himself and to others. He was engaging in cutting himself, which is a sign of extreme emotional disturbance. He was threatening to be a school shooter online. Somebody close to him called the FBI and said, this fellow, he's fixated with guns, he's fixated with violence, and we're afraid that he might be a school shooter. Well, guess what? And the FBI didn't follow up on it. I'm beginning to wonder what the FBI does.
Because they
have fouled up so many things, not to mention the fact that the Russians started interfering with our election process in 2014.
Right.
Just exactly what was James Comey and the FBI doing between 2014 and 2016? They're supposed to monitor this, but I digress. We expose these young people to horrendous violence in video games and in entertainment. They're immersed in social media where they really don't have any close friends other than their ersatz electronic ones. And anything that happens anywhere now happens everywhere because of social media. And then we wonder why we have these ticking bombs, an increasing number of these young men, particularly fatherless young men, who are ticking bombs, and then we're surprised when one goes off. We need to reform our mental health laws. I understand, they say the road to perdition is paved with good intentions. I'm sure that HIPAA and trying to protect people's privacy was done with the best of intentions. But we also have to protect society.
Right.
And that we've got to find a better way to identify these young men and either help them or remove them from circulation. We depopulated our mental hospitals in the 1960s and the 1970s, and now these people either live among us with treatment or they live among us without treatment, and it's a danger to society.
I understand that many of the homeless in our nation certainly would fall in some of that category of mental illness.
Yes,
and so certainly that does seem to be a first step. Dr. Lamb, there's so much to talk about, and we need to take a short break. I want to come back and talk about, again, your first steps recommendation, starting with some mental health regulation or deregulation, so we can talk about that also beyond the politics. And we'll do that with Dr. Richard Land when we come back on the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth filling in for Bill today. Seven past the hour. It's the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Dick Whitworth with Dr. Richard Land, president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary. also executive editor of the Christian Post. And Dr. Land, Rebecca Maxwell just told me you get the Word of the Day Award for ERSAT, as in something like Friends but inferior. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. My eighth grade English teacher, Mrs. Dietzel, would be very pleased.
Well, Rebecca saluted you, so that is the word of the day. I will try to find a way to use that later myself. It is great to have Dr. Land with us today. And, sir, I do appreciate your insights. I always look forward to when you're a guest on the Early Morning Late Show, so it's fun for me to talk to you.
Well, thank you. You know, one thing I wanted to say that I didn't get to say in the first segment.
Please.
You know, I think we need to ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? Jesus would not only be concerned about the victims, he'd be concerned about Nicholas Cruz.
True.
He would reach out. He would want us to reach out to Nicholas Cruz, the shooter. This is a broken child. I mean, it's tragic. It's sad. I mean, I don't in any way negate what he did, the horror of what he did. But, you know, no one is beyond the redemption of Jesus Christ.
That's a fact. That's true.
And when we pray about the situation, we need to pray for him, too.
Well, let's talk about how do we reach young men, and they're primarily young men, who are in these kinds of scenarios. I mean, we're talking about some mental health challenges before us from HIPAA and beyond, and certainly for those of you who and us who work in university, college, or seminary settings, there are many, many, many restrictions and rights. It's hard to know what to do next.
Well, just to give you an example, if I had a student in a college who was a freshman or a sophomore, and they were having suicidal thoughts, and they went to the mental health facility there on campus and got counseling, the counselors cannot tell me as the parent. The HIPAA laws say that my child's privacy trumps my right as a parent to know what's going on in my, you know, serious problems in my child's life. Now, that's, you know, I understand the intention of that. But, you know, I think about the shooting out in California a couple of years ago where the family begged the authorities to do something. They said, our son is going to kill people. And the government couldn't do anything about it. Until they actually do it, they can't be detained. They can't be incarcerated. They can't be institutionalized. They can't face mandatory treatment. You know, so we got to find a way to deal with the exceptions. We don't want to run roughshod over people's rights. We've got to find a way to deal with the exceptions. And we have to acknowledge, too, that our culture is a toxic culture, particularly for young men. We allow them to be exposed to the most violent kinds of video games that desensitize them to violence, that glorify violence, that desensitize them to other people. We're living in an increasingly secularized society where the influence of family, the influence of church, the influence of community, the influence of synagogue, mosque, temple are all being mitigated, and no form of do unto others you have them do unto you and love your neighbor as yourself is being taught. And so we're creating these young men particularly who are being desensitized to violence, often fatherless. They have no one to guide them into what it means to be a responsible male adult. And we end up, a certain percentage of them, the ones who are the most vulnerable, the ones who are the most deprived, are gonna explode.
Do you know, I was reminded this morning as I was driving in listening to Pete Briscoe. He was preaching, and he was talking about the change at which the pace at which culture has changed. And he said in the aftermath of September 11th, 2001, there was a gathering, a memorial service, numerous religious leaders from all walks of faith and life. Mm-hmm. Billy Graham was invited. He spoke for 40 minutes about how, you know, the gospel is for today. 10 years later, they had a similar memorial gathering. No religious leaders and no mention, of course, of the cross or of Jesus.
No. Well, And see, you know, that reminds me of something which I've thought about several times in the last couple of years, and was particularly reminded of it this last week. When I was in the former Soviet Union in 1991, I was there 2 weeks before it collapsed, and I was talking with some Russian Christians, and I was talking about the sense of meaningless, the sense of no purpose in life that I sensed the in Russia, the nihilism, different than in other communist countries like Poland or Czechoslovakia or China. And he said, well, you have to remember that in every one of the other communist countries, in the Baltic countries, in Poland, in Czechoslovakia, in Hungary, in East Germany, in China, they can all remember, there are people in their society that can remember before communism. In Russia, there's nobody alive who can remember before communism. And so there's absolutely no institutional memory of anything other than godless, atheistic communism. Well, that's what's true of our young people today. You know, people like us, we remember back when things were different, and we are still to some degree inoculated against this extreme secular destructiveness. Because of what we were exposed to as young people and adults, these children, they know nothing other than the destructive, atomizing, desocializing, desensitizing world of social media.
Dr. Landon, the couple of minutes we have left, I do want you to kind of follow up on this idea with just some of the attacks that have come in media. I know that some of the social discussion, we don't want your thoughts and prayers, we want action. And then, of course, Joy Behar from The View attacked Mike Pence's sanity for saying he hears from Jesus. Things, they are a-changing.
Well, we always have people like Joy Behar in society. Unfortunately, you know, she now has a national platform. You know, we've always had kooks like that, anti-religious kooks. But normally we don't put them on television, but now we do because nothing's normal. You see, when moral relativism holds complete sway, when there are no absolutes, then there are no rules. Nothing's normal. Everything's normal. It's what Daniel Patrick Moynihan used to call defining deviancy down. You say, okay, what is normal? Well, what is in the United States is not normal. It's not healthy. And it is dysfunctional. And it is destroying our children.
So true. Dr. Richard Land has been our guest this segment. Dr. Land, thank you so much for the work that you do and for your regular contribution on this show. Dr. Land is president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary. He also serves as executive editor of the Christian Post. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, and let's all pray for revival in America.
Amen.
It's morning. Your best bet to make it a good one is to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Well, it's been a privilege to be a part of the Early Morning Late Show today. I'm Dick Whitworth, and let me just take this moment to say thank you for your friendship and your support of Faith Radio. We couldn't do what we do without your partnership and your friendship, and I can tell you every day we hear from listeners who are encouraged, who are strengthened in their faith, in their life, in their relationships, because of your prayers and generous support of this ministry. So thank you so very, very much. Want to leave you on a bright note. If you're a fan of Ben and Jerry's ice cream, they're going to be offering a slimmed down version of its famous sweet treats, Mooforia. Moo, like, yes, okay. Mooforia, a low-calorie ice cream line, launches this month. You can choose your favorite caramel cookie fix, chocolate milk, and cookies, and peanut butter dough. Each flavor has 140 to 160 calories per serving. So On that note, we will depart. Thank you. Have a great day. Bill Arnold will be back tomorrow with the Early Morning Late Show. And a special thank you to our guests today, Patrick Albanese, Ruth Kramer, Dr. Linda Mintel, and, of course, our good friend, Dr. Richard Land. Have a great day. Happy President's Day.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.